This morning I have the opportunity to preside over this meeting, even if it's just for a few seconds. No, I won't close the meeting. Just procedural stuff in view of the absence of the chairperson. In terms of Rule 130 of the National Assembly Rules, the committees must, in the absence of the chairperson, elect another one of its members as the acting chairperson. So then I will take this opportunity to call for election.
In the absence of the committee's chairperson and as a whip of this committee, I would like to nominate Honorable Kadeblo to chair. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Are there any objections or anyone in favor of? Can we have you on record?
I second the nomination, acting chair.
Mr. Gelderblom, can I hand over your meeting?
Good morning, honorable members. Good morning, members or officials of the Department of Treasury, National Treasury. Thank you. Welcome here. This morning we will discuss the fourth quarter report, and in the absence of our chairperson, Mrs. Ngoni, that is attending the Budget Council meeting this morning in Gauteng, we hope that we will have a fruitful discussion. Firstly, we will go through this document, and then after that, we will allow questions. And immediately over to you, National Treasury.
Thank you, honorable members. I'm Andrew Donaldson, and I just want to introduce the Treasury delegation. Robert Clifton will be taking us through a brief overview. It's just a few slides on the outcomes for the year. Of course, this is the set of outcomes for the full financial year. We have representatives from several of the chief directorates within Treasury who deal with national votes. We are certainly happy to take questions on any individual vote. The report has brief notes on each department. It is quite concise. Obviously, there are many issues behind these numbers, and we're happy to try to assist in clarification if we can. As in the past, this report and its format are sort of work in progress, and so we would welcome comments on that format. This is the stage at which we will be reviewing the format for the new financial year, and obviously it's a good opportunity to make some changes and improve that if we can. Dr. Rindani Randella from our Safety and Protection Services team is here to deal with questions on that cluster. Spencer Janari from our education-related department is representing that team. Mark Fletcher, Health and Social Development Department. Mahesh Fakir deals with our infrastructure and related departments. There may be some issues relating to the Economic Services Department and Administrative Departments, which I'll try to deal with. Those particular chief directorates are not here today, but we're happy to pass on questions if necessary. Okay.
Now, who's the one who will kick off? Welcome.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks very much. All right. As Mr. Donaldson said, we're going to provide initial comments and an overview of the sectors, and delve into some brief comments on some of the outliers in terms of departments, in terms of their preliminary outcome for the year, and be fairly brief and hopefully then allow a lot of time for discussion and questions. We've got several members of the team here who can delve into the numbers, because as Mr. Donaldson said, there's the numbers and then there's the numbers. You've got to all of these votes are complex in the service delivery that they provide, and you have to actually dig into the numbers to have a substantive discussion. I'm going to start with a brief overview of the format of the report that we've tabled with the committee this morning, and then give a summary of total preliminary spending for the end of the year now, as a summary of all votes, and then look at each of the sectors and the votes that represent those. In terms of the format of the report, as has become the practice every quarter, we're tabling the report for the committee's use, and we get better at this each time. We're getting more timeous with the tabling of the report, and the formats are now seem to be working well, so we haven't changed the format significantly in the last two or three reports. So in terms of there's actually a detailed Excel report that we provide the committee, and I know that your researcher, Petalani, and your other staff dig into those numbers, because that gives you the opportunity to actually run formulas and really provide a detailed analysis. So, and I think that's important, and we felt like it was important to do that, not just provide the Word document summary. So that gives the committee quite a bit of information. The appropriated budget, then after October we include the additional appropriation. We provide a column for viaments and shifts, which then add up to what the department has available at any given point in terms of the shifts that they might have executed during the year. And it's against that number that we compare the actual spending and provide a percentage breakdown. For each of these categories, there is a detailed economic classification breakdown of current payments, transfers, and capital payments. So it's a pretty robust tool for further analysis. For the committee's own use and for the purposes of these kinds of briefings, we also table a Word document that provides an analysis per vote of the spending trends. And that this time is an 81-page report with a summary slide per page of the vote totals based on the Appropriation Act format, with some explanation provided by our budget analysts after they've reviewed the numbers and gone back to the department to query issues. And that's provided in the Word format. In terms of fourth quarter total preliminary spending, where are we today? Starting at the beginning of the year, last February, the minister tabled the 2009-10 appropriation, which amounted to 399.6 billion rand. This amount does not include direct charges, since those are not appropriated in the Appropriation Act, although they are, of course, relevant to the committee's work nevertheless. The two largest items there that account for approximately 300 billion rand are the 55 billion rand in state debt costs and 230 billion rand related to the equitable share transfers that go to provinces and municipalities. The adjusted appropriation that was tabled in October added net in 9.2 billion rand for a total available budget as of October of 408.8 billion rand. That was divided into by three economic classifications, 117.7 billion for current payments, 282 billion for transfers and subsidies, and 8.9 billion for current for capital asset payments. So where are we today, year to date? In total, national departments expended in, via their current payments, transfers, capital assets, 98.8% of the budget as appropriated, amounting to 403.8 billion rand. In terms of current payments, 115.7 billion, 98.3% of the total. In terms of transfers, 279.8 billion, which amounts to 99.1%. And in terms of current payments, 8.3 billion rand, amounting to 93.2% of the total budget for capital assets. The preliminary outcome is 5.1 billion rand in underspending, or 1.2%. These numbers are still preliminary. At this stage, they still change slightly based on suspense accounts being cleared. Obviously, we're long past the end of the financial year, so the numbers are changing, but only at the margins. The large suspense account amounts that you might have seen in middle of April have been cleared by now. So this number is unlikely to change very much as the number, the financials are finalized. When we asked the chair for some guidance in terms of areas of interest for the committee and what areas he would like us to delve into more deeply, he mentioned that obviously the priorities of government would be the most important areas to get into more detail with. The MTSF priorities, those were five priorities that I believe were mentioned in the State of the Nation address last year. We provided a table here breaking down the five and loosely identifying the lead votes or departments that contribute most significantly to each of these priority areas. And we're going to delve into, or hope to delve into with your questions and discussion into these votes as they contribute to each of these priority areas. These priorities, of course, have been now further broken down into 12 key outcome areas that have been widely spoken about and are being been used to develop the minister's performance agreements and the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation in the presidencies underway with delivery agreements around these and a few other areas that they call now that are known as the key outcomes. But again, these are the main departments, and we'll get into a discussion of based on this format, hopefully throughout this briefing this morning. On the slide six, I'm going to go through each of the sectors or clusters and identify some reasons for under or overspending in each of the in several of the votes. We have our experts here who can delve into more detail after my presentation as the committee has questions related to any one of these votes. As you can see, there are a couple. This is the administrative services cluster, so mostly the governance and central administrative departments, from the presidency up to Stats SA, 11 odd votes. You can see that there's quite a variation in spending trends across these votes. So I've picked out a couple here just for to get the discussion started. Starting at the top, vote 11, Stats SA spends 91.9%. of its budget. This is due to apparently mainly due to vacancies in Program 3, which is related to the census program this year for the 2011 census. They've changed the methodology around the 2011 census, which delayed implementation of certain activities in carrying out the census. So the 8.2% underspending amounts about 160 million rand, and again, mostly that's accounted for in delayed in activities related to the 2011 census. In terms of public works, another department here that had significant underspending in based on the preliminary numbers. In total, there on spending about 361 million rand. There are, okay, thank you. Two main areas of underspending causing this total relates to the slow implementation of capital works projects related to the Prestige portfolio, amounting to about 215 million of the underspending. About 130 million, the other important contributor here, relates to a non-payment of EPWP incentive grant monies. Some of these grant funds were not dispersed to provinces and municipalities, apparently due to those entities as not being able to convince the Department of Public Works they would meet their job creation targets in each of those localities. So there were funds withheld. Moving on to social services, and looking at really the main outlier there was the Department of Arts and Culture with an 84.5% spending. Apparently this is due to also capital-related activities, capital works projects at the many public entities that the department oversees were delayed for various and sundry reasons, amounting to approximately 400 million rand in withheld transfers to those public entities. Justice and Protection Services, representing five key departments here in the Justice Cluster. Again, small department, but with underspending of 91.1% is the Independent Complaints Directorate. The main reason is due to underspending in program related to information management and research. So it is a significant percentage underspending. It's a total amount of only 8 million rand given the size of the department. And Dr. Rendella is here to answer questions in more detail when we get to that point on the specific issues at ICD. Economic services, moving on to slide 9. Again, the main, one of the more obvious votes here in terms of the six votes that make up this cluster is relate to rural development and land reform with underspending of 91.6% of its budget. Mainly this is due to land reform grants, underspending in that area. A moratorium has been placed on buying land in the PLAS program. That amounts to approximately 540 million rand underspending in that program. I believe it relates to land restitution. Urban development and infrastructure, slide 10. A number of votes here with different spending trends for the preliminary outcome of the year. Starting with water affairs, 97.6% of the budget spent, amounting to about 190 million rand. This is mainly due to non-payment of invoices for water and sanitation projects. A rollover has been requested for part of these funds. For transport is the only vote that had overspent its budget. It was a total spending of 101.1%. This relates to approximately 406 million rand overspending in the bus subsidies program. Cooperative governance, also slight underspending, but of course it's because of conditional grants in that vote, it amounts to a significant underspend of 466 million rand for withheld transfers to municipalities. Mr. Fakir is here to delve into that with you in more detail. Finally, Department of Communications with total spending of 93.2%. This is about 170 million rand underspending for that department. The main contributor to that is approximately 116 million rand in savings, and we can safely call these savings, not underspending, because these savings were realized between Centec in a contract between Centec and Telkom for the provision of technologies related to the broadcast of 2010 games. And the amount budgeted was more than what was negotiated in the final agreement for the provision of these services and capital goods. And so there was a real out gain. Chair, that concludes my overview of spending. I know it was speedy and at a high level, but we're looking forward to getting into some of the nitty-gritty discussions with you all this morning. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we will allow now the other officials here to make the inputs, and then we come back to the questions. Is it in order? I think the first one is then administrative services. Administrative services, official who are responsible for that input, you may proceed.
Thanks, Chair. Coming to Justice and Protection Services, with regard to independent complaints directorate, they spend 91.1% of their budget, and the underspending amounts to 10.4 million. And the reason being that is due to vacancies and the money which was set aside for the relocation. Because at the moment, they want to relocate to a new place in Pretoria because they've got two offices in Pretoria, and now they would like to move into one building, which is going to be their head office. So there were some delays between there were delays as a result of DPW, and that's why now we're sitting with this 10 million underspending by ICD. And then if I have to move on to another vote, which is correctional services, which spent 98.9%, the main reason being the non-implementation of the various OSDs within the department and the reduction in over time due to implementation of 7-day establishment in the department. Thanks.
Who's responsible for administrative services?
Chair, we're not going to go through each vote here, but happy to take questions here. There are quite a number of departments. I think the main things for the committee to take note of is, as Robert has indicated, in Statistics South Africa, although there's underspending, this is really a shift between years in spending related to the next census. So I don't think there is cause for concern there. On Public Works vote, there are always significant lags between plans and spending in these major investment projects. I think that what perhaps the committee needs to note here is that much of the work of the senior management of the Public Works Department last year was taken up with the urgent business of addressing housing and accommodation requirements associated with the appointment of new ministers and deputy ministers, and shifts in departmental accommodation requirements associated with the change in departmental structures, the splits of departments, and so the additional spending partly reflects those obligations, and there's some notes on that in the document. But it's probably also true that there were some lags in other spending programs of the department because of the time taken up to deal with those transition costs and adjustments. So in Public Works, there probably will be some rollover of spending on behalf of other departments. Parliament's position, of course, is a little different from other votes in that Parliament does not surrender unspent money, this goes into the cash reserves of Parliament. There has been an increase in the allocation to Parliament over the last few years. My guess is that within Parliament's management as well, the change of administration meant some delays in projects, and we would expect to see a recovery in that spending line during the course of this year. And then lastly, in respect of the International Relations and Cooperation Department, here the strength of the RAND means that there was underspending or relative to budgets, but of course that technically is a saving. Foreign costs were somewhat lower in RAND terms than budgeted for, because the RAND was comparatively strong in 2009-10. So again, although 5% or so of spending is quite a high underspending number, this is really savings and not a failure to deliver services. So those are the main points, I think, that should be noted. Yeah, happy to take questions on any other those.
Through this report, and then we come back to the questions. Social services. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I'll start, and I think I also won't look at all of them. Just if we can focus on arts and culture, there's a big or relatively big underspending there, 84.5%, and as Robert already indicated, that is mostly because of the Capital Works grant that the department has and makes to its public entities. Very slow spending in that grant, and the reason for that mainly is because proposals, there was a delay in evaluating proposals from these public entities because the department did not have a CFO for most of the year, and that competence is normally given to the CFO. We have suggested that they put together a committee that would have as a responsibility the oversight of the evaluation of those plans going forward. And so we don't expect that to happen again in the process going forward. And in fact, that the plans for the spending of the Capital Works grant, in fact, are made available from the first quarter already of the year, so that there's not that long delay. There was also quite a big underspending in the Investing in Culture program, and that was because of a moratorium that was placed on spending in that program by the minister who instituted a forensic audit on the program in last year, and that resulted really in only 11.8 million of this allocation being spent in the year. Those two items are the big items responsible for the underspending in arts and culture. The only other one, other vote, where there was relatively a large amount underspent is in the education vote. One particular item, an allocation for workbooks that was made in the adjustments budget last year, the tender for that was stopped in about December last year, and so most of that money, 476 million of a 524 million allocation, was then not spent by the time the year end came, because the tender process was stopped. The department felt that tenderers didn't have enough time to put forward decent bids, and so they rather stopped the process, but the result of that was that they didn't have enough time to institute a new process. And so the rollout of the workbooks really is which was meant for this year, for 2010 academic year, will now really only start in 2011 as a result of that. And that's really their big underspend.
Person, if I could just cover the last two, Social Services Department, Health and Social Development. Both of them, the spending was very strong. Health was 97.5% spending by the end of the year, and social development 99.3%. In health, that amounts to a slow spending of around 450 million, and there's really only one main area of concern, and that's the hospital revitalization grant, where the underspending was of the order of 380 million. The problems were particularly in three provinces, that's Mpumalanga, KwaZulu, and Free State, and problems relate to contractual problems, legal challenges on particular projects, but there are still weaknesses really in some of the planning for these projects, and sometimes the timing of the planning and the initiation of the projects is not perfectly aligned. Otherwise, in the health votes, there were a fairly small amount of unspent items, mainly relating to particular projects not yet finished, which will largely be rolled over in the rollover process, things like the primary healthcare audits, primary healthcare facilities audits, and one or two other projects. In social development, as I mentioned, the spending was very strong, 99.3%. The area where there was a bit of underspending is in social grants, which is approaching 100 billion spending a year, but the amount of underspending was 574 million by the core departments, slightly more within SASA. That's due to slightly slower uptake of grants than we had budgeted for in the main and adjustment budgets, and it's in no way a concern. There's a very small amount of underspending on the disaster relief funds, which fortunately was due to fewer disasters than we planned for, and some of that will be rolled over. Thank you.
Thank you. Then we move to economic services.
Chair, I'll just highlight two or three things here. Trade and industry vote has some savings in personnel and the current costs. There still is quite a high level of vacancies in that department. This also includes the initial allocation for the economic development department, which is also still in the business in the process of appointing staff, and so there's some savings on allocations there. There are always some lags in spending on incentive programs. There's a very wide range of very specific incentive programs and measures to support industry, components of the industrial development program and of sector support strategies. And these are activities in which budgeting is really quite difficult. So I think that a spending outcome of about 97% of the budget is pretty good for trade and industry. The large underspending in this area is in the Rural Development and Land Reform Program. This vote, this is almost entirely the new rural development allocation. We added in the adjustments appropriation last year an additional amount of several hundred million, 400 to 500 million for rural development. But these projects take some time to be developed. And I think it's true to say we're not surprised that there was some underspending here. It was important to put the money in the adjustment appropriation to give the department the assurance that that there would be funding for new rural development initiatives, but it has taken some time to get those underway, and so we are in discussion with the department now about the rollover of those of those funds.
Urban Development and Infrastructure Services.
For transport, where there's been over expenditure. The over expenditure mainly relates to the bus subsidy issue in Program 6 of the department, and over expenditure of 406 million, which is over than the higher than the net position of 263 million over expenditure. So the department has tried to...
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. There's been an overexpenditure of around over 400 million on the bus subsidies program. This is higher than the net overexpenditure of 263 million, obviously because there has been other under-expenditure in some programs. Can I just give a brief overview of the bus subsidy issue? Members may recall that there was some turmoil in the bus subsidy industry or the subsidized bus industry over the last few months, mainly due to the disjuncture between the department holding funds for subsidies and provinces making decisions on routes. You know, officials in provinces laying down more buses and more routes than the subsidy could afford, but because they were in separate places, that actually happened. There's also a shift now. The department is now in conjunction with National Treasury running a grant to provinces, so provinces know upfront what they have and what decisions they can make on bus subsidies. There's also a shift towards kilometer-based contracts versus passenger-based subsidies or subsidies based on passenger numbers. So there are steps to actually address this, but it has resulted in an over-expenditure in this year of 406 million in the bus subsidy program. The department did search for sort of avenues in which to spend less in other areas to make up for this, but most of these are actually earmarked or specifically and exclusively appropriated items, and this resulted in an under-expenditure withholding of a transfer to the roads agency of 145 million to offset this, the bus subsidy problem. So there are a number of other smaller items in which, you know, the department has actually tried to spend less to make up the shortfall on bus subsidies. We can get into the details if members wish to. Let me just move on to human settlements. There is an under-expenditure of 238 million, mainly due to unfilled vacancies, consultants, acquisition of computer services, as well as a delay in implementing a community outreach program intended for housing in Deep Sluit. If I go on to minerals and energy, there's 143 million under-expenditure. Most of this is made up of the Integrated National Electrification Program, in particular the non-grid service providers of 82 million and 33 million for municipal Integrated National Electrification Program contracts. Well, a small amount of 5 million was for the REFSO program, which is the Renewable Energy Finance Subsidy Office. So in the execution of or the incentive for renewable energy, there has been a slight expenditure. Water affairs. Okay, there's basically 187 million under expenditure. These are made up of many, many small items, such as, you know, savings on management fees in the bulk infrastructure grant of around 22 million, 19 million compensation of employees for due to unfilled posts, 103 million on goods and services for non-payment of invoices for water and sanitation projects under the Accelerated Community Infrastructure Program. Lower transfer costs to the water trading entity of 20 million rands for construction projects. Lower transfers to resource poor farmers on dam safety projects, a small amount of 2.5 million. 13.6 million on the water services operating subsidy for refurbishment of water schemes before transferring them to municipalities. There is
one item of 10 million for that was supposed to have gone to the Mopani District Municipality for late business plan submission. I just want to go to the Department of Corporate Governance and Traditional Affairs. The main item here actually shows over 500 million rands under expenditure. This is a special item that, you know, we are still working on correctly reflecting this. It's not actually under expenditure. 466 million of this is actually was agreed between the two ministers, Minister of Finance and Minister of Cooperative Governance, on offsetting unspent conditional grants by municipalities previously. So this so-called under expenditure here is actually has been spent by municipalities and is being offset against their conditional grants that were not returned to the fiscus previously. So I think it's incorrectly reflected. We must do some work on reflecting this correctly. I think the final under expenditure would only amount to about 35 million rands, not 500 odd million rands as reflected. So there is an agreement to offset unspent conditional grants. The last one I want to look at is communications, 168 million under expenditure. This is mainly a savings, what I would call a savings rather than under expenditure. 96 million rands and another 20 million rands for Centec and Telkom respectively on 2010 World Cup projects realized lower actual tendered prices than what was budgeted. So there was a savings there. So these are mainly for the creation of redundancies for World Cup technology, both on satellite communications and fiber links for World Cup guarantees. Another 20 million rand budgeted for program production and 3 million rand allocated for NEPAD, eAfrica Commission for funding ICT initiatives was not spent. So that's the under expenditure portion. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Now we will discussions on the topics. Let's first start with administrative services. That is on page 6. Any questions from the honourable members to the officials here on administrative services? Page 6. Just identify for us what budget vote it is, and then we can ask officials to comment on them. This is what? Honourable members, what?
Thank you, Chair. I just want to, on public works, Ms. Clinton mentioned something about, some prestige portfolio and some moratorium placed on it. Can I just have an explanation as to what that is, the prestige portfolios and what the moratorium was placed on? We had a quite a substantive presentation with regard to EPWP. We know that there was understanding there, so that we know about. But the other one, we're not so sure about those. That's the one thing in that department. That one. The other one is that it was mentioned that monies go into the parliamentary reserve. They don't pay money back to the fiscus or to treasury rather. And I want to know, have we got any idea as to how much money is lying in that reserve at the moment, and for what can it be used?
Any other questions from the honourable members on that specific topic, administrative services? Okay. Department or Treasury? Mr. Donaldson? We'll deal with that question.
I can do it. We might need to do a little homework, so it might help to take a few questions as we're going. But very quickly, the prestige project basically is the heritage building, the union building, the parliamentary precinct and portfolio, and some of the older heritage buildings in Pretoria. I need to do some homework to check on exactly where the delays were, but there's about 200 million less spent than was anticipated on some of those big renovation projects. I think this is probably in the big redevelopments of the Pretoria administrative complexes. What has also been delayed here jointly with the International Relations Department is the investment in the Pan-African Parliament building. I think, speaking under correction, I can check on that in a moment, I think the budgetary provision for that is actually on the International Relations vote. The Public Works is responsible for the project. In Parliament's case, well, Parliament's financial statements in its report do indicate the position. Over the last 3 years, the reserve has shrunk somewhat, so there has been, not this year, but in the previous year, some spending out of the accumulated reserve. My understanding is that Parliament's administration is setting aside some funding for the infrastructure development and the parliamentary precinct project, but not all those decisions have been finalized yet.
Chair, may I ask this question, excuse me, I'm not necessarily going on to state administration. I just want to ask the, it's a question that is a little bit an overall question before I get into that. I just want to ask this question. I note and I hear the presentation that the Treasury is quite careful in terms of the figures. They're careful in the sense that they always say these are the preliminary, they will change, but not much, but we must work on the figures. I want to ask this question because I need to know what we are actually dealing with. When will the figure be final in terms of the report that we probably look at it, in terms of making our mind whether we are happy with the explanation of under expenditure? So I just want to find out from them in terms of preliminary figures, because I thought that the PNSA is quite instructive in the sense of when the final financial statement has to be presented, all that things. And I just want to find out if you could just help me to understand it so that we understand the value of the figures we're discussing in terms of adjustment upwards or downwards, because it does have the bearing. If you say this is under expenditure, but when you go to the final figures, you say, but actually there was a spike that we didn't look at this, and there's actually no longer that worrying under expenditure, it has been adjusted upwards. I just want to be sure about that, Chair, and I'm sorry that I'm asking this question because you're already zooming that into a specific section, but I'm still worried in my mind about this cautious presentation because I just need to know what is the real status of this issue, because before we get into the specificness, when would you be happy with the final figures? Because I think we need to apply our mind as well in terms of making a proposition in our report with respect to what you have given us as the, well, may I say that 100% or 99% reliability figures in terms of actual, this is actual. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, I can answer that very quickly, if you like. I mean, the deadline for departments to complete their financial statements for submission to the Auditor General is yesterday, the 31st of May, the end of May, every year. So these numbers were taken a week or so ago. They are very near final, with only one significant exception, we would be very surprised to see significant changes in these numbers. The exception is the amount that Mr. Fakir mentioned, which is the reflection as underspending of an amount in the equitable transfer to municipalities. And that's reflected as an underspending here because it was withheld as a recovery of previously unspent conditional grants. But strictly speaking, for accounting purposes, that will actually be recorded as a spending item because it will be the equitable share is in effect being transferred. There's a recovery of conditional grant money, so there's an adjustment in the accounting numbers there that has to be made, and that will raise the spending level by 400 million or so. Apart from that, you can treat these numbers as near final. They're unlikely to be significant changes. Our caution is really about understanding the details of what lies behind them, because the numbers get finalized now, end of May, but departments have another month or two to complete their reports, and so the detailed explanations of the outcome are not yet fully available to us. So in some cases, we don't have the full story behind the numbers. And we have to be a bit cautious about the explanations we give. And I can just say, in respect of the, just to give an illustration of that, in respect of prestige building, I see from the notes and the explanation that the prestige portfolio, as Public Works account for it, includes spending on ministerial accommodation. And I know that there were some delays in the acquisition of properties. And so my guess is that that underspending, at least about half of that underspending, probably relates to the costs around the transition that I talked about earlier.
Thank you. Happy, Mr. Amazakani?
I happy as far as I can be in terms of the answer that I got. But I think perhaps we should proceed with understanding that it is then therefore the kind of preliminary close to final, but not quite there.
Thank you, Mr. Schwab. Then Mr. Schnapp.
Chair, yes, I see the new departments are not mentioned at all, such as economic development, etc. Have they not had any expenditure up to now, or what is the situation, or has there been no split? And I would be pleased if Mr. Donaldson can maybe give me the figure, or we can, you know, I don't know if we can look for it, but what is in the reserve of Parliament is the actual figure.
We'll have to hunt around for that parliamentary number, but we'll come back to the committee on that. In most cases, the new departments were warehoused by or looked after by existing departments until the end of the last financial year, and so full reports for economic development, for example, for the Department of Energy, for the Department of Mineral Resources, will only be reported for the new financial year. In economic development's case, there was an additional allocation of about 30 million, of which about 16 million was spent. So we have those numbers in the trade and industry vote. Similarly, we could do the breakdown and provide an explanation on particular departments if there are questions on those.
I understand it. Mr. Swart would like to have a breakdown on that thing. Mr. Swart, thank you. You will provide this up to us perhaps before Friday, if possible?
Most cases, the information is here because you can, for example, in environmental affairs, there's a shift of responsibilities for the marine activities to agriculture, forestry, and fisheries, and you can see those numbers in the document here.
Thank you.
Mine was also looking at a more broad issue. I think it's an understanding. I believe the annual reports were also required to be submitted with the financials as per yesterday. I know in the provinces it was the case, not to Treasury. Can I have an explanation around it? Because when we're speaking about the note, the note, because there was a circular issued by Treasury requesting that. I'll get that circular. All right.
Treasury?
Maybe I can just clarify there, because a financial statement has to be accompanied by a management report, and sometimes there's a bit of confusion between the department's full annual report and that management report, which is an overview of the financial position. And my guess is they do have to have a draft of that ready. We do get draft annual reports before, you know, during the course of the next month or two. I'm not aware of any deadline that they had to be submitted by now, but we usually get draft annual reports by, in the course of June. They come with the budget submission, because they're quite helpful in assessing the next year's budget request. But there may have been instructions in respect to provincial departments that are different from the national department.
You may proceed.
There is no instruction. I mean, clearly there's going to be the performance auditing that's going to take place, because we're looking at this as sterile, this being red, you know, these numbers. Okay. When Treasury gets those draft annual reports and you start to analyze them, the strategic plans that we pass the budgets on at the beginning of each year have got specific outcomes. Now, I want to know what tools Treasury has got to be able to verify that what is stated in the annual reports on achieving those objectives. How do we measure that?
Chair, we could spend several days on this, but I'm going to ask Mr. Clifton just to comment a bit on what we are doing in relation to the performance information framework, and also the discussions that are in progress between Treasury and our Technical Assistance Unit and the Monitoring and Evaluation Unit within the Presidency. But in sum, the short answer is that we will rely to a considerable extent on the Auditor General's auditing of performance information, and increasingly the Auditor General is undertaking reviews of the systems and the reliability of the data that lies behind non-financial information. I think it's important to be clear that a full performance assessment of a department is a much larger thing than just checking on the performance information. But you need to have confidence in the reliability of the information if you really want to undertake a full review of the efficiency or the effectiveness of transport spending or of the public transport system or of education or of health services. And so we are keen to see the Auditor General expand, by agreement with departments, its auditing from the financial systems and financial data to the systems through which numbers of houses built, numbers of children in schools, what's going on in hospitals, the non-financial information. Our view is that an incremental approach to expanding the checking on the reliability of that non-financial information is likely to yield more fruitful results than an attempt to do a comprehensive assessment of performance of departments. And so we would expect to see, and I think it's really coming through in annual reports and in the work of the Auditor General and in the Auditor General reports, we expect to see a steady expansion in the Auditor General's role, and we certainly will rely on that information. But that is not the only source of information on performance. There are also surveys undertaken by external independent evaluators. Be familiar, for example, with the reviews of South Africa's performance in respect of numeracy and literacy at several stages of the school system. Those are useful sources of information. Some of the kinds of surveys that Statistics South Africa does, the recently released review of performance in respect of living standards and on key poverty measures. There are independent assessments of health outcomes. All of those are useful and valuable sources of information on performance. So.
Thank you. Follow-up, then we might go back to Patrice.
Not to want to belabor the point, but I think the short answer is there that for our oversight, without going to validate the expected outcomes on the ground, we can't rely on the data that's given to us at the moment. Really, am I correct? Assuming that.
this data is just financial data. I think that, but non-financial data, there is certainly. I would put it slightly differently, if I may, Honourable Member, and that is that there is a great variation in the reliability of non-financial information.
Okay, a very short one.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to ask, in the language in the report you presented, there's a term that is used, savings and understanding. Now, I just want to make a follow-up question in relation to performance outcome or expected performance outcome in relation to the words savings, departmental savings. If the department has, in fact, budgeted for X, Y, Z, and throughout the year, then they call some of the money that's supposed to be spent for something as savings in reporting to Treasury. But they explain to you that this is a saving that we have made with respect to this. Now, how do you satisfy yourself in relation to the two interchangeable terms, under expenditure, as well as the savings with regard to the output or outcome of the particular program that is expected? That's a link to this performance that you're speaking about. And while we're on that issue, this understanding issue that we mentioned, what's the operating understanding that the Treasury has in its own regulation? What do you regard as a, well, generally acceptable percentage of under expenditure in terms of the financial year? What is that number? What's that figure? You know, when we discuss, we then have a proper measurement as well.
The straightforward answer to the question on savings and underspending is that if a service is delivered at lower cost, then that's a saving. If lower spending results from a non-delivery of the service, then that is underspending. If an ARV program costs less than was budgeted because the drugs were acquired at a lower unit cost, that's a saving. But of course, not all measures are straightforward. Not all services can be easily costed, and so there are many cases where it's not easy to make the distinction between savings and underspending. So one knows the answer in theory; applying it is more difficult. The Honourable Member's question on what would be a reasonable norm, I think that an aggregate underspending level of something like 1% or between 1% and 1.5%, such as we're looking at here, is reasonable. I think that's. I think we have stabilized national department spending at an overall level of spending relative to budgets that is reasonable and normal. Members may remember that in the 1990s, in the early years of the implementation of new RDP program objectives, we had underspending on national and provincial, many national and provincial votes of 5 to 6 to 7% of the total budget. And we were rolling over from one year to the next in 97 and 98 and 99. We were rolling over over 5% of total spending. And that was a consequence of very substantial reprioritization and transformation of government and lags in implementation. Now we're at a level of about 1%. I think that's a more reasonable number. I think that this outcome is on aggregate a satisfactory outcome, but that doesn't mean that every vote is quite as satisfactory as others. So.
Thank you. We have to move on, gentlemen. Any further questions on administrative services budgets there? No further questions. Then we move to social services. Any questions there? Anything on arts and culture? No questions. Then we move to justice and protective Can we come back to arts and culture? No further questions there? On social services. Okay, Member Whip.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we would like to need to have more clarity on arts and culture, especially this number of entities, how this about 4 million was withheld, so that we become familiar with this, the issues related to arts and culture. You know, you talk about Cape Tax in arts and culture. And without the background of arts and culture, we will definitely like to know what you're talking about when you talk about this overseas entity. I don't know, Mr. Clifton mentioned something about overseas entities or what, of arts and culture. If, I don't know whether we get that from you or from our researcher to do that research to get more information about arts and culture, so that when we deliberate on ourselves, we must have more about arts and culture. But whatever information you left out, will you kindly relate it to our researchers so that we understand how money was withheld, these entities, how they are related to arts and culture. We just see them singing and doing all this stuff, and very little capex in it. Thanks.
I'm not going to answer your question, but Mr. Tenari is. I think when I said oversee, I meant that the department oversees the entities. These are all domestic entities, and Mr. Tenari can answer in quite a lot of detail. He's definitely our expert on that area. Okay. Any other questions on that specific? Mr. Ramatakani, then we can come back to the question.
I just want to ask the question on the education. I think in the presentation you did mention that the issue of the workbooks is now distanced to 2011. I can't remember whether that was the understanding of the general budget presentation. If you can refresh my mind on that and the effect of that. The second question that is related to the education, it's not quite clear. There is always this debate, and when we come to transport, I'll raise this question again, around this issue of the function or the possible function shift with respect to the learner transport and the expenditure thereof. Is it the function that is located in education, or is a function that is kind of transversal with the function and responsibility where in terms of the funding, actual expenditure. So that when you look at the overall issue of expenditure and patent on both, we can have an understanding. I know that earlier the Department of Education earlier did suggest that there's a policy shift or discussion around a policy shift with respect to the function itself, in terms of provision of the transport, possibility of shifting in terms of the funding, that is no longer a transversal issue. Now, to what extent is the Treasury involved in that discussion from the rent and send point of view?
Thank you. Two questions, Shin. May I proceed?
Thank you, Chair and members. I'll do the capital works question in arts and culture first. There are about 29 public entities that are the responsibility of the Department of Arts and Culture. And the department gets an allocation for capital works at its public entities. So the public entities have to put forward business plans or proposals for capital works that they need at their entities. And then the department will then evaluate or appraise these proposals and make an allocation based on the business plans to the various public entities, and of course within the budget allocation that they have for capital works. Now that process was hardly happened in 2019, the process of appraisal of the business plans. And as a result, just over 350 million of that allocation was not spent in last year. This is not to say that there is not a need for the capital works at these public entities. So the business plans were submitted. Just the appraisal process didn't take place within the department because the department structures itself didn't work properly in the last year. And so that is part of the rollover process, that allocation. The department has asked for a rollover for those funds because, as I say, there is still that need for that for the capital works at these public entities. The public entities, as Mr. Clifton pointed out, are all local ones. Yeah, it's just that the department oversees them. They have put in place at the moment, from about January, February this year, they put in place a new structure in the DG's office to oversee the capital works budget and allocations in the department. So we don't expect that each that happened last year to continue. With regards to education, there is an allocation for the workbooks that was made in the new budget. And the expected, or the plan with that new allocation, was for those workbooks to be developed in this year so that they can be distributed to schools for next year. The underspending we're talking about here is an allocation that was made in the adjustments budget last year, which was so that for workbooks that were meant to reach schools this year, 2010. Now we're already at the end of the second term virtually, and those books haven't been produced yet, and except for the grade R material, but the material is supposed to extend up to grade 6, and so that's why I'm saying that those books won't reach the schools in time for this academic year, which has essentially pushed back the workbook program by a year. So the allocation for this current financial year, which is for workbooks in 2011 academic year, is still meant to be going ahead as planned. The learner transport issue is at the provincial level. It's an issue that is paid for by provincial either Department of Transport or the Department of Education. It is a policy question between the two departments that has to be resolved. At the moment, it's not being consistently applied. So in the Northwest, for example, the Department of Transport, they has taken over that function and the budget. In some of the other departments, other provinces, they've decided that even if the function is delivered by the Department of Transport, it is the responsibility of the Department of Education to get learners to school. So they keep the budget and they then pay for the service to the Department of Transport. And in other provinces still, the Department of Education delivers the function and, of course, has the budget. So that has not been resolved, and we have put it to the Minister of Education, to the Department of Education, rather, that was an issue that was raised during the budget deliberations, and that there needs to be some resolution between the two departments on where who must take over the function. But as I say, education's position is it is their responsibility, irrespective of who delivers the function, their responsibility to ensure that children have access to school. And if that means that they need transport to get access, then that is their responsibility. So that is currently their position. But it is something that we have asked them to engage the two departments to engage on and get to some resolution so that there's some consistency across the country in that regard.
I think that's also a case that we will raise with the departments when they visit us. Thank you. Any further questions on social services? Then we can move to the next one, that's justice and protective services. Independent Complainants Directorate. Yes, Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, can I have an answer for Mr. Swart's question on Parliament's surplus funds, if I may. The big EME volume includes a table that has the revenue estimates for departments, contribution of all departments to revenue, and in Parliament's case, the surplus balance is reflected in that table. So in this year's EME, you can see that that Parliament's estimates show a surplus balance which reached a maximum of about 370 million rand at the beginning of 2008-09. In 2008-09, there was quite a bit of spending of that, and it was down to about 120 million at the beginning of last year. This surplus of about 80 or 90 million in 2009-10, together with revenue, will mean that there's probably about 200 million in the overall surplus accounts in Parliament. But I'm sure that if you speak to the Secretary's office, they will set out a whole lot of commitments of that money. So that's the cash in the bank.
Thank you. The Independent Complaints Directorate has 91%. You mentioned programs not implemented, research unit. Am I right? What is the problem there?
What happened is that there are two main factors making that 10 million under expenditure. The main part of it being 9 million almost, which was earmarked by them for relocation of the head office. And 1 million, it was out of the vacancies that they have, which is almost, I think, 3-4%. They are intending to move to a new head office because at the moment they've got two offices in Pretoria, which are part of the head office. So, and there were delays by DPW.
Is mainly with public works that didn't produce.
I think it goes back to a point that Mr. Donaldson indicated, that as a result of focusing on immediate needs like prestige, accommodation, and others, then this also caused a delay on other projects run by DPW.
That's also a question to public works when we call him. Thank you. Move to economic services. Sorry, Mr. Snell. Thank you.
With regards to the police, we've noticed over the last few years, they spot on the button basically every single year. On 47 billion, I think they're like 27,000 short of spending their budget, which is quite phenomenal. Are there any lessons that can be learned? Why are they always so good at spending their budget?
My experience with the police is that out of that 47 billion budget, 70 to 75% goes to salaries, so 190,000 members. And part of that money, most of it is earmarked, so they can't do anything about it. I think they are only left with 5 billion or so that they can, you know. So, and over and above that, with their capital work budget, what they do most of the time, they overplan, such that if plan A fails, they adopt plan B. If B fails, they adopt C.
Okay.
Can I add to that? Because, I mean, the lesson for other departments is good cash management in your head office. They sit up the night before the end of the financial year and they push through invoices until they can see the cash balance is zero and then they stop.
Thank you, and then Honourable Member Whip.
Thank you, Chairperson.
still under police, I would like to understand their physical accommodation, because it seems they do more of rental than own their own premises. I don't know whether I'm right and whether that is advisable or what, if they do rent a lot of police, because in my constituency, they've rented a five-bedroom house, which has tend to be very small, and it seems they pay more for that little house. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
I'm not quite sure in terms of the buildings as to whether they own, but what I know is that at the police stations, it's their buildings, but the ownership rests with DPW. And going forward, they've got the responsibility to build, maintain on their own under the pilot project.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm a bit worried about the gender representation of this unit that is addressing us today, but later on that. I've got a problem with correctional services and non-implementation of the OSD. When correctional services has been telling us that they've used most of their budget towards OSD, but now there is non-implementation of OSD, can you just clarify that for me, non-implementation of OSD, thank you.
Within correctional services, they've got, allow me to say, various OSDs. They've got OSD for the prison warders, for the nurses, educators, artisans, and at the moment, they've implemented OSD for prison warders. So they still have to implement OSD for the nurses, and for the nurses, educators, and the artisans. Involved in the, I know part of the delays, like with justice, is to do skills audit, experiences that people have, the qualifications and all of that. Hence these delays. But for the prison warders, they've already implemented it. So they still have to implement the one for the artisans, educators, and the nurses.
On that specific point, Actor General Commission, but any other OSDs that outstanding?
The other one which is outstanding is the Phase 2 OSD within the Department of Justice, because they still have to do this skills audit, mainly at the National Prosecuting Authority. And with the Legal Aid Board, so they're going ahead. So within justice, it's mainly at the MPA.
Thank you. Any further questions? Then we move to Economic Services. Mr. Honourable Member Swart, Rural Development and Land Reform.
Chair, maybe I just didn't get it right. But as far as I could hear, Mr. Clifton, there was a $540 million underspending. And then there was a moratorium placed on something as the main reason for this underspending. What was that moratorium placed on and why? This department always tells them they haven't got enough money and then they underspend about $540 million.
Yeah, you mentioned about, I think, $450 million rand. What's the total? If it's possible, if not possible now, then we will wait another 5 or 10 minutes, then we will proceed, because that is a very important topic for this committee. Because any other questions on that economic services? Honourable Member Whip.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's just that I've forgotten the program, but it's a social, I can call it an economic development program that empowers under DTI the unemployed and those still developing. And that, I don't know whether this one with incentive is the incentive program one, which is really underspending. I just want to know which one is it and how much it had and how much was underspent. But I just forgotten the name of that program under DTI. Thank you.
Can we proceed perhaps to the next one and while Mr. Donald?
That's what my proceed then to the next one.
I'm worried and nervous in the fact that agriculture, forestry and fisheries, which is in the economic services, but I'll couple that with water affairs, had spent, were the least spenders in the third quarter at the 60s, but now they shot up to the 90s, and yet, I think I'll ask my question when we come to urban development, because it will be specifically on water, but on agriculture, maybe National Treasury can explain what explanations they give to the to Treasury, because explanations always go to Treasury. For what is done, it goes to Treasury. What is not done, it will still go to Treasury. Maybe Treasury can explain to us. Third quarter, there were 60-something. Now, what month is this? Now, it's 90-something. So before the end of the financial year, it will be totally spent. Thank you.
For the first question of agriculture.
Let me just clarify that on agriculture. Yeah, I mean, this is a case where, you know, we will really only have a full picture once the department is able to put a full report together. And there is some complication here in the restructuring of the votes with new functions coming into the vote. But let me come back to rural development and land reform and trade and industry. The rural development and land reform vote, there was quite considerable shifts between programs during the course of last year, and if you compare the program structure of last year with the new program structure in the ENE for this budget, you'll see there's been a reallocation of some activities between programs, and so that does make the comparisons a little difficult. As I indicated earlier, the additional funding, which was about $250 million for rural development itself, which was only made available in the adjustments budget, was not fully spent. Some of that was departmental capacity that had to be put in place. I think they were a little ambitious in wanting to expand staff and services in administration for that rural development activity, and the minister quite rightly towards the end of last year said, hold on, let's make sure we've got our plans in place for this, and so that funding will largely be shifted across to this year. There have also been some delays in the cash payments on some big farm settlements, and again that money will shift across to this year. On trade and industry, I really think we can't really speak on behalf of the department in respect of specific economic development programs. We share the members' concern here. But if you look at the structure of the trade and industry vote, there are a wide range of specific incentives and activities. The Minister of Trade and Industry, I know, has been keen to see a review and a realignment of the activities of agencies related to small business development and better partnership with municipalities and the agencies responsible for economic development in provinces. And we would hope to see some improvement in those programs over the period ahead. But overall, if you look at the trade and industry vote and compare this outcome with previous years, I think it's true to say there has been progress both in budgeting. There are more programs where we're seeing spending coming in more or less in line with budgets, and there is also there has been an improvement in overall spending relative to budgets. The small business support programs and enterprise development programs require good local capacity. You can't really run all of those from a central office, and I certainly think there's further work to do in building that capacity. And if I can come back to the agriculture questions in a moment, Chair.
So, Fakir?
I think moving on to sort of the question on water affairs would be very useful, I mean, in addressing part of the urban development and infrastructure questions. I mean, the thing here was the third quarter under the projected under expenditure was in the order of 800 million, and now you're saying that it's reduced to basically about 200 million. And the thing that reduced the under expenditure is the approval being granted by the National Treasury for them to utilize about half a billion rand that was supposed to be for the DWOP social component for a few other major projects that they had done. Now, there were delays on the DWOP project, so we allowed them to spend the money on the Nandoni treatment works and distribution network, the Nyaka water treatment works, the Fluwe regional water scheme, and the department had applied to be able to do that because they said, I mean, what is the use of, you know, if you can't do the project, why not do other projects with it? And so they were given the approval to go ahead with those.
Thank you. Move then to urban development and infrastructure. Any questions on urban development and infrastructure services? You know, if you speak English and you pray, it's very difficult sometimes with a rrr. Okay, no questions on that point. We have two questions there, one from honourable member on this side, honourable member on that side.
Thank you, Chairperson. On this one, I see that environmental affairs and water affairs, let me say, leave forestry aside, it's blank at the end. Is there a reason for that? Or maybe an explanation for that thing?
Honourable Member, that's just there were a couple, just two votes that actually split prior or at split prior to the adjustment budget, and so those budgets were adjusted and created and formed two new votes in the adjustment budget. So the amounts were transferred out of votes 35 and 43. Okay. The vote was agriculture vote was transferred from vote 23 to vote 35. So you'll see the money was carried over to another vote, and the same for water affairs. So that's just for recording reasons that we left it there, because in the initial appropriation it was appropriated in that way. But just look at the two new votes, 35 and 43, for agriculture and water affairs.
Could I just ask a reminder of exactly what the query was on the agriculture vote?
That was the query of Mr. Swart. Underspending of the amount.
What was the moratorium placed on that you mentioned? And, you know, I wanted to know on what was the moratorium placed and how much did that involve in monetary terms?
Normally when we talk with the department, they say they haven't got funds. And now here this morning we say it's underspending.
Yeah.
I thought there was also another question. That question was related to rural development land reform. The Honourable Member also asked, about the spending trends from the third quarter to the fourth quarter for agriculture. And
to now to 1997,
that's right.
Another question
of the Member. I'm not sure if Ms. Donaldson can address that. I think we don't have Mr. Naidu here, who's the Chief Director for that budget, and I would have to do some more research, but Ms. Donaldson might have some insight.
If it's not possible for you now, then you can come back to us in the next 2 days. But are you willing to assist us now?
There were several quite large investment projects investments in provincial irrigation projects, and my guess is that the delays in spending or the difference between the third quarter and the fourth quarter would be that those came through during the course of the fourth quarter. But I should come back to the committee with a more detailed explanation.
Can we, is Friday okay? Thursday? Thank you. Thursday before 4 o'clock? Thank you, Mr. Donaldson. Mr. Swart and then Mr. Ramatakani, Honourable Member Swart and Honourable Member.
Thank you, Chair. I just have a general question. Are we nearing the MTPS period? And we had a lot this morning again about rollover environments and what have you. We know that the Money Bills Amendment Act has been approved, and we would like to hear from Treasury how they see the role of this committee as far as those items are concerned. Do they, because apparently what happens at the moment, they don't have to come to this committee, it seems. They just go to Treasury and it's approved. Environment, I know there's an 8% that they can get in terms of the Act, which of course we can't do anything about until the Act has changed. But do we not have to consider those before the time as a committee in terms of the Money Bills Amendment Act?
Thank you. Is there any, come back to that one now, Mr. Schwartz, Mr. Ramatakani, is that on urban development and infrastructure?
I just want to ask on the communication, I think it's 93%. You did mention something in your input, but if you look at the page 53, there's a big bullet there that speaks to vacancy. What does it amount to? That's page 53.
It's about 24, page 33.
On communication, we said the bulk of, you see, there was 168 million under expenditure. We said the 96 million and the 20 million for Centec and Telkom 2010 World Cup projects, respectively. So together, that accounts for about 116 million of the 168. And that there were a few other items, obviously, that made up the rest of that. Part of that was the vacant positions, outstanding payments to service providers for broadcast digital migration, and then on payment for capital assets, there were lower spending attributed to delay in tender processes for test machinery and equipment for set-top boxes. So, but what I'm saying is that the bulk of the 168 is actually the 96 and the 20, plus the 3 million for NEPAD things that make up about 120 of that. But those were not the only items. There were vacant positions, there were vacant and other smaller items due to small delays in tender processes on set-top boxes. So I'm not sure whether you want me to address anything else specifically related to vacancies. I'm not sure what was the question. But the bulk of it is actually a savings on the tender, the actual contract prices being lower or the job being done for less money than what was initially expected. It could be seen another way that we've overestimated on tenders and they've come in lower, but it's still a saving. The actual outcome was produced.
Chair, I just wanted to establish whether there was the whole thing about vacancy was quantified in terms of rent and cent. So, I think I'll leave it there because we're still going to engage with the department, because the vacancy issue, that amount to savings, it's throughout many departments there is that issue about vacancy rate, and that's equal to savings. I'm not sure whether that's actually savings, but we will take that to the department when they come, because there could also be a fat built into a budget. So in terms of the structural, or just the structure of the department itself. So I'm not quite sure whether it is saving, but we will take that further. So why I'm asking the question from Treasury, I wanted to understand whether in terms of your looking at the figures, you've been able to quantify the issue about vacancy rate in a department, what it amounts to in terms of the rent and cent, if you look at across. Because it does have something to do with the budget, whether there is actually a proper budgeting with the department, with respect to each department, an organogram of the department for service that you need to deliver. So that was behind the question, but if you haven't quantified that, we could still take that further with the department when we engage with them.
I think, Chair, we could quantify it if you actually needed that, or you could take it up with the department. I'm also aware of a number of suspensions in the department, et cetera, so that could lead to a lowering of personnel costs.
Thank you. Are you happy with the answer or not?
Well, I think we should take the offer then of that quantification so that we can have a look at the globality of it, what is the amount.
Yeah. We will come back to you in this regard.
Thank you. To a person who is not learned like myself, can you explain the reason for offsetting the conditional grant of 466 million to cooperative governance and traditional affairs when it also has managed to underspend the 5 million which it was supposed to use? I won't go into gripes that we experience when we interact with the department, but if you can just explain for me to understand. Thanks.
I'm not sure what the honourable member means by asserting, but okay. If I had to offsetting, okay. I'm sorry. I thought I had asserting. There were periods in which municipalities were given conditional grants, like municipal infrastructure grants, etc. Which they, in those years, did not spend. And under the conditions of the grants, they were supposed to give it back, right? But they didn't. And so, in effect, what is being done now is to give them less equitable share to make up for that. So in other words, they actually had the money. They had this money, so we are giving them less of the equitable share to make up for them not giving this money back before. I don't know whether I'm getting it right. All right.
Ms. Snell, are you happy? Sort of.
The Department of Minerals and which one that was to deliver water and sanitation to the water and sanitation plus electricity to the rural schools and clinics, but because of withholding of that grant, that service was never provided. So is it going to be the same to those other departments which have this big job to do? Because last time we had a meeting with some members of Treasury, we said, seeing that water and sanitation to schools and clinics run, as well as electricity to schools and clinics in those rural areas has not been completed because of withholding. Treasury must look for funding to have that done so that those rural schools and clinics are taken care of electricity-wise, water-wise, sanitation-wise. If it's done to one, will it be done to others?
Ma'am, I can report that the schools and clinic grant that was also, it was actually given to Water Affairs at the time and the Department of Energy. And they had basically spent their money well, and there was no withholding from those grants. According to them, the clinics were all done on electrification. Water Affairs, but we have not withheld any money from a Treasury point of view. So if they have not spent it, then, you know, these are not grants that we have withheld money on.
I can also just add that this has partly been a process of getting the information from municipalities. There was initially about 1.5 billion rand that was identified as unspent previous conditional grants for various things. And when negotiations, reports were requested, they were not forthcoming. And then when the Department of Corporate Governance together with Treasury said, well, now we're going to start withholding your money, then they started sending the reports in. And that 1.5 billion has now been reduced considerably to 500 billion or something like that as the reports have come in. And so it's been a bit of a to-ing and fro-ing to try to get the reports in and clarify what needed to be repaid and what didn't. Certainly there has been very varied performance of municipalities. But I think the outcome of this process has certainly been a considerable improvement in reporting, and that's good for both financial management of these municipalities. It will also be good for our understanding and for Parliament's understanding of what we're actually getting for these transfers. So it has been in some municipalities, certainly it's meant people have faced some difficulties, but both the Department of Corporate Governance and ourselves in Treasury have been very involved over the last 6 months in assisting municipalities sort out those accounts, and in particular to ensure that the equitable share requirement, the subsidization of basic services, would not be interfered with by the process of recovery of capital spending grants.
Answer the question of Mr. Swart. Is there any other further questions on this document that's provided by the Treasury? Mr. Lennox, Honourable Member Lennox.
No, Chair. I wanted just to ask Treasury if they were to deviate from the brief that they have there. What would they say to the committee is their concern with regard to expenditure patterns, general expenditure patterns of the department? And I'm asking that question because we are concerned about the general spike of the last quarter. It's a trend. And you're saying that the police can sit in the head office and count the invoices. But we are concerned about the spike, because the spike, the degree of it in some department is quite big. Some were 61% in the third quarter. When you look at them, they are 99% or 98%. That's why I'm asking, if you were to deviate from your prepared brief, what would you say to the appropriate committee if you're concerned with regard to expenditure pattern of the department? If you don't want to deviate from the brief, it's fine. We would find that answer sometime later.
When Department of Water Affairs came to brief us around Duhu, they had made mention that there were outstanding financial agreements that needed to be signed with the various mining houses that were going to be supplied water. If you could enlighten us as Treasury, that clearly then wouldn't have been a triple P agreement at the onset. So how then could the department go ahead, commit to a project, and then say that the mining houses, because of the downturn in the economy, are not going to sign those deals, and they're then going to approach Treasury for the additional billions that are required to finish the project based on the fact that water is a constitutional right? Our concern is that if they are making, if they're saying things like that at the moment, no mining house in their right mind is going to sign that agreement if they know the Treasury is going to be giving them that money based on constitutional principles. So how could they put that project plan together without those signatures of those mines in the first place?
You know the question of the book? Thank you.
Thank you, mine is nearly the same, but at the lower level. It goes with costing and of departments, because we find that sometimes they shift these monies, blaming it on the fact that the costing was not according to the plan. They costed less. I just want to know where you come in, because you also go through the business plan. At some stage, let me take hospital revitalization or any other project where we can know that the amount, it might not be hospital revitalization per se, it's because I was in health. The amount they cost is 3 million when it's supposed to be a billion, and they short, or it can be a bit more. And then they talk about this fireman's and shifting of funds because they had costed low. When they submit the plan to you, is it possible for you to depict that there was financial management from their department was poor? Their financial skills are poor. That's why they undercosted the project. Do you go through that progress, or do you just say, no, this is the business plan, it has complied because these are the guidelines, introduction, material, what, then they've gone through the guideline, then whatever the figures, and you pass it, or do you help in sending in back and saying, we think you didn't cost the project properly? Because sometimes they blame it on the fact that money was not enough, despite the fact that in hospital revitalization, they delay and the cost of material go up. I just mean in any project which they can finish but realize that they had costed low. Do you assist them somehow? Thank you.
You're welcome.
Chairperson, may I know if Treasury does have a fund to capacitate the people that deal with finances in departments to be financially astute in order to make sure that whatever they're doing with the budget given to them is what is required and that is what they should do. Thanks.
It's now time for the department to respond, or for Treasury to respond. It's nearly 1 o'clock, so I expect that you are.
Thank you. Let me begin with this last cluster of issues. We can step aside from our brief and perhaps make some general comments. I need to say that the financial management within departments varies. There are some excellently managed departments. There are some departments where there are still serious financial management problems. So it's hard to generalize. But I would make the following broad comments. Firstly, we're still not where we need to be in respect of management of infrastructure and capital projects. And so you can see in several national departments, the underspending is on capital spending or on infrastructure-related activities or maintenance of infrastructure. That's also clearly a problem in many provincial departments. And so you see a common pattern across departments where infrastructure spending is lagging behind still, and there are still there's still lots to do in improving the costing of capital projects, the management of capital projects, ensuring that deadlines are met. You can see it in the hospital revitalization program. Things are better than they were perhaps last year, and so there has been a bit of progress over the last 5 years, whereas 5 years ago we were looking at spending against capital programs or infrastructure of maybe 50 or 55 or 60%. Now it's maybe 80% or 85% of budget, but that's still not where we want to get to. So there's still a big, there's still a substantial problem in that area. I would add to that that we are particularly concerned about the management and planning of big IT and systems improvements. And Minister Godin has prioritize that as an issue that, that requires our attention in Treasury, and he is working closely with Minister of Home Affairs, for example, and the big IT systems there, working with the Minister of Health on the big IT projects and information system requirements of the health system. And this is partly about saying, hold on before you contract and make sure you really know what you're contracting for, that you've got clearly well-defined deliverables, and we're finding that there have been many cases where big IT system procurements have been undertaken too hastily and with inadequate control. And this is an area in which worldwide there's experience of projects that fail or projects that end up with big cost overruns. It's hard to get them right because it's very hard to specify exactly what you want. You're not looking at something that's quite so clearly deliverable as a school or a building. And so you've got to put a lot more work into the specification. So we have picked up that as a concern, and it's an area that Minister Godin is insisting that we put quite a bit more work into, and I think needs more scrutiny, needs more accountability and reporting. Thirdly, there are in several departments quite considerable gaps between the departments' personnel establishments and what is funded. And so you do get different reports from different departments. You have to be, departments talk about vacancies. Sometimes they're talking about vacancies against what is budgeted for. Sometimes they're talking about vacancies against an establishment that they would like, but that is not yet within the budget and is not not perhaps affordable or will take several years to phase in. And I think that there's a bit of confusion about that, and so we in Treasury need to put a bit more work into clarifying in our budget discussions with all departments exactly what establishment is funded. There may be other plans for longer-term development. Then we need to separate that and report on that differently, because we have certainly picked up with the large salary increases last year, some departments getting into difficulties, some uncertainty about what adjustments needed to be made. We've realized that in planning for next year's budget, we're going to have to put quite a bit more work into clarifying what the establishments are, what is funded, and making sure that where salary improvements are under discussion or where OSDs are being implemented, that we have a proper costing of that. And that's something we need to do jointly with the Public Service Administration Department. And then lastly, and this relates to the point about infrastructure, better feasibility studies, better plans, and better costing certainly needs to be done across the board. Do we put work into, do we have some capacity to assist with that and with financial management? Well, there are specific grants to municipalities and partnerships with provincial treasuries that are focused on financial management. So in the intergovernmental system, yes, there's specific funding flows that are associated with capacity building. The Accountant General's Office has also put a lot of work into developing its own capacity. So the Accountant General's Office has expanded its own capacity to provide financial management advice and assistance, but also to accredit training programs to develop standards for public sector financial management certification, and together with the accounting profession, we are piloting within Treasury a program of in-service training of accountants and leading to professional qualifications, and that program certainly is being expanded into provincial treasuries as well, and provides the basis for a support service to for improved financial management right across government. There are also other specific initiatives. The Technical Assistance Unit within the Treasury provides project management advice and something of a website and a set of training programs and materials that are available to departments to for support for project management. The Treasury has a partnership with the Development Bank of Southern Africa in providing assistance to municipalities with infrastructure, financial management, and planning. And, of course, there are also other departments that have parallel initiatives. So yes, there are specific resources and support going into capacitation of financial management across government, but there are really tens of thousands of officials across government who have financial management responsibilities of one kind or another. So this is not a small project; it's ongoing work, and will continue to be prioritized. And then, if I may comment lastly on Member Swart's question on the approval of rollovers, approval of adjustments, that really is a responsibility of the Budget Office rather than these public finance teams, although obviously we work with them jointly on that. The consideration by Treasury of requests for rollovers of unspent funds happens quite early in the budget process. There's already been the first set of meetings on that. And so we would be in a position, or Treasury would be in a position, to brief the committee on that process certainly earlier than the adjustments appropriation, which is in September. It might well be something that could be done as part of the review of the first quarter numbers. In some ways it goes quite logically with that. And perhaps we should give some thought to that. That may be useful to the committee in preparing, if you like, for the adjustments appropriation discussions. Viaments we don't get involved in so much, because that's departments have discretion in terms of the PFMA to shift money. They don't really have to come to Treasury except in a few exceptional cases for approvals there. So that's more a reporting issue, and it's probably not sensible to try to do that until after the adjustments appropriation when departments have made those changes. I don't think that there's anything, but we can go back and check, I don't think there's anything specific in the Amendment of Money Bills legislation that relates to these adjustments changes, but the question is a good one. It certainly, as far as I can see, there would be nothing to inhibit us from having an early presentation to Parliament of rollovers. In some ways, that would assist in giving certainty to departments. So.
Thank you. I think there's no more further questions. There are still outstanding issues, and I think if it's possible, you can provide us with the information before 1500 on Thursday. Is that in order? And then from my side, it is the end. Okay, there's still an outstanding question.
I think the question related to the Wok Dam and you know, the mines, etc. In planning for a big water scheme like that, the The actual, I mean, if you're planning an actual pipeline size, you've got to count the offtake from the dam and the different components of use, whether it's agriculture, mining, residential, etc. Now, if you had to provide just for the community, you may have, you know, that size pipe. If you've got to provide for mines as well, you'd have a much bigger pipe, you know, two or three times the size, which is far more costly, etc., as your main line that feeds to them and then offtakes in different directions for different things. Now, if you do not have the agreement signed that they are actually going to offtake, and it becomes a huge waste of expense to actually build a massive pipe from the dam when, you know, people are not going to offtake, that actually makes it more expensive on the community if the mines didn't offtake after you built a big pipe. So the price of that water becomes far more expensive. Therefore, you would rather wait until the mines have made up their minds and, you know, given some certainty that they will offtake before you build it. So the project started in a period where, you know, platinum prices were booming, mines were, you know, there's no slump in the economy, and mines were willing to do it. And then you had the massive slump, and mines are not so willing anymore. So... and therefore that created the uncertainty in the project. Now what size pipe do you build? Do you just go with the small one and then the mines come in later and say then you have to build another one next to it? Or I think, you know, you get the picture. It's a difficult decision to make. No, but the state should rather, what should the state do? Should we, as a state, fund the bigger pipe with the uncertainty?
That's my question, Chair. Treasury must explain to us what their role is in that kind of decision, because we're being told that that money will come from Treasury based on constitutional prescripts of everyone is entitled to water, clean water. Now, that's the point. If they're making noises like that, the mines will never ever sign that they're going to get that infrastructure for free. Explain to us, maybe in by Thursday as well, in writing, Chair, then we know what's going on.
Can we follow up on this? But
it's a very important question because we experience that. And that is a very important question. What Mr. Schnell raised.
My understanding certainly is that mines will still be expected to pay for the water. They will not get the water free. But in the absence of written agreements, mines hesitant about signing up for the next 30 years, in the absence of signed off written agreements, the state has underwritten TCTA's borrowing in order to make these investments. But that borrowing is nonetheless on the understanding that there will be a full cost recovery from the mines. Now, of course, if the mines fold, if the mines go under, then the state will be at risk and we will end up having underwritten the investment and there may be delays in recovery. But it's really a question of who carries the risk. In order to ensure that the mines can take advantage of mining opportunities in future, the state puts the infrastructure in place, there will still be a full cost recovery from mines. But I think let's ask Mr. Fakir to get the numbers and perhaps come back with a more detailed response on that. So.
I appreciate if we can get in more detailed information on that specific point. Thank you. No more questions from the members on this side? On this side? That side? No more questions? Thanks to the department. If it wasn't for these two ladies on that side, it was only ladies on that side. Thanks for the honourable members. According to Rule 130, it is the end of my position as chairing this meeting. I adjourn this meeting. Thank you very much.